It was for those people that the notarial arts were particularly practiced, the arts of the notary, producing clear, crisp, public documents of various kinds and private documents as well, wills, for example. Well, the kind of Latin that is used in those sorts of documents needs to be correct, it needs to be unambiguous, but not necessarily adorned, decorated, beautiful. So what Guarino wants people to do is go back to the writing of Latin and Greek. By now, Greek is also very much a part of this Renaissance phenomenon. He wants people to go back to Latin and Greek in all of their ancient purity. Now, he wants people to be able to write that way, but then he also wants people to read the classical texts. Why? Well, Guarino had a kind of a very deep faith in the idea that if people read and read and read again classical literature, they would, almost as if by habit, emulate the values they found there. It's as if this literature and the values that permeated it would permeate the character and quality of individual people. They would become like the people about whom they read. Now, goes without saying, he admired the people he met in classical literature. Second, he sought to put rhetoric in the preeminent place long occupied by logic. Now, remember, in the 12th and 13th centuries, logic really became the key element of the trivium, the key element in the liberal arts, just as in the Carolingian period preceding that, grammar had been the key element in the trivium. Now, rhetoric. Now, there's a reason for this. Guarino believes that in his view, what he might have referred to as a republic of virtue, all right, you're reading these classical texts and emulating the values there, he felt that this kind of a republic of virtue could more easily be created in an environment of graceful language. So to him, beautiful language, graceful language, artfully constructed language, is what should mark and cultivate the public life of a great city. So rhetoric, finally, comes to take a central role in Renaissance Europe, as logic and grammar had had earlier. But here, as I think you can see, we have this educational theory, which is something rather new. Now, finally, in thinking about this Florentine period, we ought to come to the great Florentine leader, Lorenzo de' Medici, Lorenzo il Magnifico, the Magnificent, 1449 to 1492. He died as a relatively young man. Now, he opens up, I think, for us some further perspectives on the evolving Renaissance phenomenon. His family had risen from plebeian origins. Then they had gone through trade, they had gone on into the cloth industry, and then they had gone on into banking. By Lorenzo's time, his grandfather, I believe it was, I think I'm correct in remembering that, actually founded the banking house. But by Lorenzo's time, the Medici family was the richest in Europe, and they dominated Florentine politics. To travel down one of the main streets of Florence to this day and walk by the Medici Bank is to have a real sense of the power of this family. Lorenzo became head of state at the age of 21. He was young, he was lusty, he was artistically astute. He wrote poetry, most of it doggerel, but he did write some poetry. He retained always kind of close associations with the lower classes in town. He posed as a sort of a popular leader, which always, well, not always, mostly earned him the respect, the admiration, and the support of the lower classes, always volatile in the city of Florence. But he was also a very accomplished diplomat, a very hard-headed negotiator. In 1454, in the so-called Peace of Lodi, a whole series of cities in northern Italy that had been in each other's throats for a period of time made peace. Well, this means that in the years after 1454, when Lorenzo is in charge in Florence, generally northern Italy is at peace. The French invade in 1494, as we saw in an earlier lecture, but generally speaking, now northern Italy is at peace. And it's in that environment, then, that Lorenzo was able to cultivate culture in Florence. Now, he was absolutely diligent in his pursuit of the goal of making Florence the cultural capital of Italy, which really meant of all of Europe. For example, in the latter years of his life, he was spending half of the Florentine state budget buying books for the Medician Academy. In what state now would we spend half the public budget buying books? Now,